What's up and welcome back to Kinda Funny's Pixar in Review, the final days of Pixar in Review. I'm going to miss you all.
Remember me.
Sure, we'll find our way back.
I will remember
here.
You, Nick. Thank you. That was fantastic. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by It's Christmas in August, Joey Noel.
Hello.
The big dog, Kevin Coelho. Jesus Christ. I don't know, Kevin. I don't know. And of course, you're the producer slash seducer, Nick Scarpino.
Remember Andy. Oh, wait, Andy's here. What's up, Andy?
And joining us for the first time in a while, making his glorious return to Pixar in Review, it is the one, the only, Andy Cortez.
Un poco loco!
Nailed it. Nailed it.
I never in my life, Andy, thought there'd be a movie that focuses on Greedos as much as this.
So many
Greedos. And I remember seeing the theater for the first time and just being like, oh, a little piece of Andy will always live with me.
God damn, it's so good, dude.
I love it. I love it. This is Kinda Funny's In Review, where each and every week we get together and rank and review two different movie franchises. Last week, we just wrapped up Don't Breathe In Review. Here, we're continuing on with Pixar In Review. And later this week, we're beginning our journey with Scream In Review, which I am very, very excited to talk to people about, including James and Elise Willems. So that's going to be a whole ton of fun. Can't wait for that. If you can't wait for that, you can watch this show on youtube.com/kindoffunny and roosterteeth.com. If you want to get it as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny In Review, and we'll be right there for you. If you want to get the show ad-free and watch live as it's being recorded, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producer Molecule has done. Thank you so much, Molecule. Because of that, you won't have to listen to our ads about Canva and stamps. For everyone else, we'll tell you about those later. But for now, let's talk about Coco. With a runtime of 1 hour and 45 minutes, it was released on November 22nd, 2017. It was in active production between 2011 and 2017, making it the longest production schedule a Pixar movie has ever had. So that's kind of fun facts for you. It was directed by Lee Unkrich, an American director, film editor, screenwriter, and animator. He was a longtime member of the creative team at Pixar, where he started in 94 as a film editor. He later began directing, first as co-director of Toy Story 2, and he'd continued to go on to co-direct Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo. And then he made his solo directorial debut with Toy Story 3 before doing Coco. So this man's got the stuff, everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's somebody Pixar wants to stick around, for sure.
Well, after working at Pixar for 25 years, Unkrich retired in January 2019 to spend more time with his family. So
it's
The music was done once again by who, Nick?
Paul Newman.
Michael Giacchino, the legend.
Oh, wow.
Who actually makes a semi-cameo in this movie. The conductor of the orchestra during the big Ornesto thing, what was modeled after our boy Michael G.
So wow. That's cool. That's really
Nick, would a conductor actually snap his stick like that? Is that a move?
That is something we're taught, but it's only to be used in the rarest of circumstances.
Wow.
When you really
are you a conductor?
Someone, I used to conduct a band,
He did the triangle, remember?
That's no. Do I remember that? Maybe not.
No, Kevin just decides to muff jokes every once in a while. But yeah, I was, in fact, the conductor of the band for a long time.
Michael Giacchino, like I said, did the music for this. But he was not alone. There was a lot of different Mexican musicians that were involved in the entire score for this process. And on top of that, Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez did the hit song, Remember Me.
What about Mario Lopez? What was he doing?
Mario Lopez? Not involved.
Oh, wow.
I hear they texted him and he was like, I believe in you guys. And that gave him the extra oomph they needed.
Yeah,
they're like, Mario, we need you. You got that youth. You still look like you're 25. And he's like, I thought this was an animated movie.
What would you do? Andy, what would you do if you texted Mario Lopez and he just sent you all every season of Saved by the Bell on DVD?
Oh my God, in 4K remastered?
No, it's in standard definition.
Yeah, damn it.
Standard
definition.
But Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez, you might know them from what, Joey?
High School Musical, the musical, the series?
Frozen is what I was looking for. They're the people that made Let It Go, obviously won a lot of records and Oscars and this and that. Remember Me also got the Academy Award for Best Original Song in this. They also did all the music for WandaVision, all the fun theme songs, and Agatha All Along and all that stuff. So they're pretty damn dope. This one had a budget of $225 million. Coco's the first film with a nine-figure budget to feature an all-Latino principal cast. So that's really cool. And a box office of $807.8 million. It spent more days number one at the box office than any other animated film in the 21st century. This film opened in Mexico three and a half weeks before it opened in the U.S., where it surpassed the Avengers, the first Avengers, as the country's highest grossing film of all time.
Wow.
In terms of awards, this one was a banger. The film won two Academy Awards for Best Animated Feature and Best Original Song for Remember Me. It also won Best Animated Film at the BAFTAs, Golden Globes, Critics' Choice Movie Awards, and the Annie Awards. And some fun stats for you, Andy. Whenever a guitar is played, the animated character's fingers match the fingering of the actual chords. If you watch the video of Ernesto Miguel's watching near the start, the camera zooms in on his hands when he's playing notes, implying it's actually a stunt double. It's not him playing. There's no wide shots of Ernesto playing. So that's a fun little,
that's amazing, little tidbit
there for you.
What, guys, as the only semi-professional musician in this group, Andy notwithstanding, I know, Andy, I'll speak for you on this one.
Okay.
It does bother me when people are playing an instrument and they're not actually playing the instrument and or doing the correct finger positions for said instrument. The biggest offender is trumpet. We'll leave it at that. We're not going to call out anyone. Leave it at that.
I mean, I feel like with the trumpet, you could just kind of hit those buttons and just God
damn it,
out.
Andy. That's not
And the Bechdel test is a measurement of representation of women in fiction, asking whether a work features at least two women who talk to each other about something other than a man. This one's interesting. It passes, but just barely. There's actually only one scene where there's two women talking to each other, and it is with Mama Coco and her daughter towards the end. I would have thought this was a slam dunk, but it wasn't. But they did it
Now, does it count as a man if it's a little boy they're talking?
That is some levels of complication. Yes,
it's always my interpretation that when they say talking about a man, it's a romantic thing, and it's always about the guy. And in this one, I think it's different when they're talking about their child.
Yes. Kind of, it's a conversation if like one person is clearly lost and doesn't know what's happening.
The thing about all of this is a lot of this is just it's vague and it's more of an idea, right? Yeah. It's not like there's no science to this. But even then, with what you're talking about, Nick, it's like there's not that many instances of women speaking to each other in this movie, period.
Right.
It just feels like there are because there's a lot of female characters. More often than not, they're talking to men. So an interesting thing I saw was the film contained certain themes and content which would be ordinarily banned in China, but reportedly the Chinese censor board members were so touched by the film that they made an exception and just fucking
wow. That's how you know you're making good.
That's
movies.
Wild.
Damn.
When the censor board in China is like, fuck, we gotta give this one a pass.
It's a good movie.
Andy Cortez, you're back. I want to hear what you have to say about Pixar. What you feeling about Coco?
I thought that there would be zero chance for this movie to hit me as hard as it did the first time, which was so emotional for me to see just all the representation, all of the stuff that I connect with on such a deep level. Even though Dia de los Muertos was something we did in school and not necessarily was a big family tradition. It's stuff that I knew about a whole lot, but it's just nothing really my family talked about a whole lot. So the concept of Alebrijes and these spirit animals wasn't really anything we ever, the first time I heard Alebrije was, I think, in this movie, to be honest with you.
Ofrendas.
Oh yeah, all that stuff is definitely for sure, because a lot of that stuff is we would do in school as a way to kind of, you know, understand our culture better and stuff like that. But goddamn, this movie hit me just as hard as it did the first time, and I saw it. I made the mistake of watching it on a plane.
Oh,
with,
no.
With two masks on. And by the end of the movie, crying. I am just, I don't want to wipe my nose because I'm on a plane and COVID and all that. And I've just got fucking mocos. I'll call them mocos instead of boogers because we're doing Coco right now.
Yeah,
I got mocos coming out of my nose. My tears just rolling down my face. And I'm double masked up. This movie, I think, is just... it's as good as a movie Pixar can make. And one thing I really, really respect about it, aside from all the other stuff just being so accurate, and I think the first time I talked about this movie was just how I always thought as a kid, why does nobody in my grandma's photos of her grandparents, why does nobody smile in these, not black and white photos, but like, you know, sepia tone photos and shit. And when I saw that on screen, like, I was dying of laughter because it's the same stuff where it's just families looking just pissed off. And I thought that was like, all those things are so great. But the one thing that I really enjoyed about this movie is that there are really small things that are kind of set up that you think are just there to say something, really. And then they kind of play a bigger part in the movie later on, with Frida and all the stunt doubles and having, and that being sort of something to kind of follow up on. Because when you first see that, I think, oh, maybe that's a Frida Kahlo thing. Maybe that's part of her history that's a reference that I just don't understand. But they have it kind of play a really big part in how the characters solve their issues. And there are several moments in this movie that do that. And I just think Pixar just fucking nailed this movie front to back. And I didn't think it would hit me as hard. And I was bawling again, like fucking 10 different times in this movie. So very, very good job, Pixar. You have a big, bright future ahead of you.
You think they're gonna make it? You think they're gonna last?
No, we'll see. I don't know.
Not with the way Disney's treating me.
Joey.
Here we go again. Yeah, I've only seen this movie once, mostly because it was one where it's similar to the beginning of Up, where I was just crying in the middle of it. The first time I saw this, it was Thanksgiving. And we went with my whole family, and my uncle and my cousins weren't there because they were saying goodbye to my great aunt, which is like my Mexican side of the family. So like, I remember being in that theater and being like, this is too much. This is too close to home. I'm so glad that they didn't come to Thanksgiving, because they also would have been like bawling in the middle of the movie theater about this. But I think it's Pixar's, I don't know if this is like too early. I think this is like one of Pixar's best. It's also like the most gorgeous film I feel like I've ever seen in terms of animation styles and colors and stuff like that. I think the characters are all really fun, and like, I think there's enough like fun twists and turns, and the music is great. Like, I can't speak highly enough about this movie. It's so good.
Yeah.
I really like this movie. I think it's beautiful. Like, the colors are exceptional, and that makes a huge, like, you know, the difference when you're watching, and you know, like, I got all the hues light going, and I'm like, wow, what a masterpiece. I think the story is very much keeps your attention, and it's all these twists, but it doesn't get me like on an emotional level where it's like all the Day of the Dead stuff. Like, I'm Peruvian, like, that's not something that we, or at least that I grew up culturally doing, so that was all really new, and it wasn't something that I could like relate to. And just also, I'm not like musically inclined. We all know that. No.
What? News to me, Kevin. News to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah. So like, when they were like, "Hey, stop playing music," I was like, "Yeah, kid, stop it." You know what I mean? So but I mean, it's a really, really good story.
Knock it off, kid.
Like, make the shoes. You know what I mean? Anyways, but like, people need shoes. I really did like it, and I think that it's a spectacle to watch.
Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Sentiment echoed. Saw this in movie theaters, was blown away, and then was looking forward to watching it again a second time, wondering if it was going to hit, and it absolutely hit. I think it's, you know, very, very, very well structured. I think the characters are all great. They're voiced wonderfully. The cinematography in this is amazing. The art direction in this is, it should win every award out there possible, because it's just so beautiful, their use of colors. And it's got a dog that ends up being a spirit creature. What more could you want from that? One of my favorite things that I didn't catch before, but is now one of my new favorite things in the movie, is when Dante and Pepita come around the corner and you see their shadows, and Pepita's shadow is like gigantic, and then it comes down and she's this little tiny cat.
Yeah.
And it turns out that maybe cats and dogs are spirit animals. We should respect them more, Kevin.
I'll never respect a cat. Not for this joke, not for anything. I don't respect them.
yeah, for me, this movie's it, man. Like, this is as close to a 10 out of 10. I mean, fuck that. It is a 10 out of 10. Like, I can't believe that so many years into Pixar movies and so many down this list that we're still getting bangers to the level that I'm like, okay, well, fuck. It's going to get so hard to start comparing them with the little things, and it just starts becoming a personal preference situation at some point. But I think that it is inarguable that this movie, from every vision point that they were going for, they nailed it. Like, the art design is so fantastic. The first time he strums the guitar and the pedals fly up and all that, it's just like, cool. That moment alone could make this movie number one in my book. But that's not all the movie has. It has so much heart. It has so much, such a great plot with such great characters, and it uses those characters in the most fascinating way possible. I don't think there's a single like lost moment of the movie. It keeps moving. Every set piece and situation they're in does my favorite thing of both being interesting to watch at the time, but also feeds into a greater narrative as a whole. And that works for plot and for the characters and for just everything. And it's not just our lead that is growing and changing over time, but it is everyone around him. And by the time this movie ends, like, if you're not bawling when Mama Coco is singing, you don't have a heart. And that's just not even the end of it. Like, when it keeps going and you see them come from the land of the dead, they're all kind of hanging out, even though they're not really hanging out, we see them all hanging out together. It's like, oh, damn, guys, powerful stuff. They fucking nailed it. Voice cast was phenomenal across the board. I love that Pixar was like, all right, Disney, hold my beer. Y'all want some musicals? We're bringing the fucking heat. And they did it in a way that was just so fun. I loved that Remember Me is such a great song, but that wasn't it. The Poco Loco was fantastic as well.
What a slap that is, dude.
Totally. And it's just like, man, I literally cannot say enough nice things about this movie. And I loved it the first time I saw it, but going into the second, I was kind of like what Nick and Andy were saying, of just like, I don't know. I don't know if it can hit the way some of these other ones are hitting. And fuck, I was so wrong. This was amazing.
Yeah, I was worried initially because I thought, did I just like it because I'm Mexican and I'm seeing a lot of brown people on screen and all the songs are hitting and all the mariachi stuff, like all that stuff just hits close to home. Was that the only reason that I really think that highly of it? And I was so glad to sort of be proven wrong and be like, no, it's just great across the board. And again, yeah, like you mentioning right now, Mama Coco hitting those when she starts to come in with those lyrics, like, God damn, it's so good. And the movie's full of purpose. Again, you mentioned it already, but there are so many moments on screen that just seem like this is a line we're throwing out, or here's something we're kind of pointing out. But it's largely going to serve a better purpose later on in the movie. And it's just so smartly written in that way.
Yeah, and with that, one last thing I want to say is from the first opening moment of this movie, we get the Walt Disney castle, and then we get the fun mariachi version of the When You Wish Upon a Star. I'm like, cool, this is fantastic. And then it goes into the, I don't know what their names are, but the papers, the Mexican papers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what they have a name that I don't remember.
Pastel picado.
Yes, that's what it is. That stuff where it's like they had them like animated in that fun 2D style. It's like, we always love when movies do that, especially when Pixar does it, because they do it so well. But I don't think it's ever been done this well. This was like so good, where it hits on all those levels of it fits the culture. It fits the narrative. We're immediately engaged. We are so in with this Miguel kid. And he's the moment that he starts with a little bit too much exposition, it cuts to the scene of the guy being like, hey, I don't need your life story, man. And I'm like, well, fuck, they got me right there. God, this is good. Nick, let's get to the plot once Andy gives you the song.
Oh, yeah. This song was written by a Reddit member, mamasboy_live, who said, I think Andy should sing this song with these lyrics. And I'm going to play it very slowly because it's a hard song to play and it has chords that I'm just not used to doing. So forgive me for the mistakes that I'm about to make right here. All right, here we go. Here we go. Tell us the story. Although we already know, tell us the story. Though you are elderly and slow.
Okay.
Right. Just know that you are in my heart almost as much as Greg. Until we can convince him to come back. tell us the story.
Okay. Well,
that was so good, and it was only made better by the perfect moment of silence, just Nick going, okay.
So great job, Mama's Boy Live, for writing those lyrics.
Kevin, please write his name down. He's been
on the list.
He is on the list. We kick it off, and right off the bat, this movie something special. We get the Disney. We get that. We see the castle and the lake and the train and all that stuff. And it's the Disney song, but they got a little mariachi flair in it, and I am not mad at it at all. Coco tells the story of how. Miguel tells the story of how he is cursed. A long time ago, there was a family, and the dad had a dream to play music for the world. So he went out for a pack of cigarettes and never came back. The mom banished all music from her life and found a way to provide for her daughter. She learned the fine art of shoemaking and taught that to her whole family. And for her, and as her family grew, so did the family business. But music tore her family apart, so shoes held them together. The woman was Miguel's great-great-grandmother, Mama Imelda, and her daughter is Coco, the titular character of this movie. Now I know what you're thinking, Kevin. I know exactly what you're thinking here, Kevin. There's a lot of generational gaps here. Is Nick going to get confused like he did that one time with Mortal Kombat? The answer is yes. I was like, great, great grandma? Who the fuck? Why are there so many people in it? Anyway, good movie. Solid movie.
That was a great grandma, right?
Great, great grandma.
So because
he has an abuelita. It's just his grandmother.
His grandma's the tough one.
Coco is the great grandmother.
So Coco is his great grandmother. Imelda is his great great grandmother. Mm-hmm. Now, again, Scorpion is their distant cousin.
That's true.
A whole different part of the world, but it's no big deal. We'll get to that later.
Oh, I want to point out from earlier. Enigmatic, I had the chat open. It says, it's papel picado. I don't know why I said pastel. That is cake. I just missed. That's just me reading
sounds
wrong.
Sounds delicious, though, Andy. You made me a little hungry, if I'm being honest.
That's just sheet cake right there. Let's see. The family still tells the story of Mama and Mother's story every year on the Day of the Dead. Mama Coco calls Miguel Julio, just like when my mama Scarpino used to call me Max, which I know what you're thinking. Isn't that the dog's name? Yes, but that's not because my mother had any loss of any faculties. She just put me and the dog on the same level. Abuelita runs the house and cannot stand music. The family is fine with it, but Miguel likes to fucking jam out every once in a while. Yeah, it's all about Ernesto de la Cruz. He was the most beloved singer in Mexican history. He is Miguel's role model, and he started movies and had the coolest guitar ever. He's Miguel's all-time favorite. His all-time favorite song is Remember Me. He lived the kind of life you dream about in 1942, he was crushed by a giant bell. Miguel wants to be just like him, presumably minus the part where he gets crushed by a giant bell.
Who can say?
I want to point out also something that I love about this part that makes a lot more sense once you figure out the plot of the movie. But the fact that Ernesto's version of Remember Me is this grand big band once he had sold out and had he was on this giant stage walking up these stairs, and it's this big production, and the music doesn't even necessarily sound the same. It's all fast-paced and kind of commercialized in a way. Mm-hmm. And when we later find out Hector's version of it, and it's like this slow kind of the lullaby version or whatever, the guitar version, it's such a long... there's such a long distance in between those two songs stylistically, and it's just really cool to me that when Ernesto de la Cruz was really big and famous, that you could tell totally had just sold out, and they were just playing this on big ass stages at festivals and shit like that. So I love how they kind of made that a big point of emphasis right there.
Miguel wants to be just like him, and he gets the feeling that they're connected somehow. And then we cut to that part where he's doing the shoes for one of the mariachis. Like, kid, don't tell me. I want to know your life story. I just want your shoes shine here. But he tells Miguel that there is a music competition and talent show in the square that night. He offers to give Miguel his guitar to play. Abuelito comes over in a rage and beats his ass with a sandal. Now, I personally used to get the wooden spoon, but I see the merit in the sandal. It's softer and it stings more, I think, to the leather.
They break, though.
Whereas the sandal has more of a whipping action. So I can understand the merits of that for sure. Miguel rips off a poster of the talent show and says goodbye to Dante, his street dog, so he can go home and get the what for from his parents. They shut him down and tell him tonight is all about family, no music. Abuelita tells Miguel all about the rituals behind Dia de los Muertos. Coco wants her father to come home one more time, and it's very, very sad. Keep cutting over the corner. They just leave Coco over there. Miguel sneaks away to a secret hideout, which has a shrine to Ernesto de la Cruz. He tunes the makeshift strings on his makeshift guitar and then fires up an old de la Cruz movie so he can play along with it. And of course, Miguel, you know, he gleans lots of different sayings from de la Cruz, one of which was, "When life gets me down, I play my guitar. The rest of the world may follow the rules, but I follow my heart." Tim Geddes. Man, yeah. I wish I learned how to play guitar. I just wrote that in here. I think that was a note that I wasn't supposed to say out loud. In the movie, it'd be cool, right? In the movie, Ernesto tells an interviewer of what it took for him to seize his moment. He says, quote, "I had to have a faith in my dream. No one was going to hand it to me. It was up to me to seize that dream, grab it tight, and make it come true."
And he sure did, huh?
Oh, he did. Anything it takes to seize that dream.
He wasn't lying about it. Yeah.
How's that? How's your beverage there, Kevin? Is it good? Tim, how's that LaCroix? Is it good?
What are you going to take from me?
What can I take from you that I haven't already taken? let's see. Miguel resolves that night to seize his dream. As his family sets up for the celebration, he sneaks out, but he's spotted by his abuelita with good news. It's time for Miguel to join the new the workshop, carrying on the family tradition of making shoes. But he's like, "I don't want to do that." So he leaves. And then Dante eats the food on the ofrenda. When Miguel tries to stop him, he knocks down the picture of his great grandmother. And when he opens it up, he realizes that the guitar in that picture is the same guitar that Ernesto de la Cruz uses, which means that Ernesto de la Cruz must be his long lost great great grandfather. He proclaims to his entire family that he's going to be a musician just like Ernesto de la Cruz.
And you got to assume, Nick, that when we later find out that it was actually Hector instead of Ernesto, that, like, goddamn, that guy must have done a lot of push-ups and upper body workouts before this photo, because his body is looking wide and thick and strong, and he does not have that frame. So it of course, anybody would mistake it as anybody but Hector, because he's a little bit of a lankier guy, you know, and yeah. Ernesto's got this big sort of Buzz Lightyear-looking chest. So, yeah, I can't, you know, begrudge Miguel for not understanding and thinking that that's Ernesto, because that's a big looking dude on that picture.
It's also smart that they made it the great great grandfather.
So yeah, because then no one living
would have remembered it, and so it's more believable that they could have hidden his identity.
Yeah,
whereas had it just been his grandfather,
he also died.
What's that?
Well, he also died before Coco was like too old, right? So
yes, but presumably she would have remembered her father's name, right?
Maybe not if her mom was like, burn it all to hell.
How old do you have to be to remember what your parents look like if you were captured and abducted by an old man in a house?
By lights out logic.
Not the name of the thing.
Don't Breathe, aka Lights Out, aka
all the same.
If you're going by Lights Out,
Don't Breathe in review. Check it out.
You can be 2, you can be 14. Doesn't matter. You're going to forget. A fire makes everyone forget everything. Haven't you seen X-Men Dark Phoenix? It's just the same logic.
X-Men in review. Go check it out.
Go check it out.
But if the great-great-grandma is like, burn it all to hell, we're not, if she's banning music, she's absolutely banning any mention of his name.
True,
yeah, so I don't know how much of that would have gotten passed down.
Fair enough. Abuelita asks if he wants to end up like Ernesto, forgotten, left off his family's ofrenda, and he tells her he doesn't care about any stupid ofrenda. So she does what I've always wanted to do when Fran brings out his guitar at parties: smash that shit in the ground and see if he wants to go get some dinner. Miguel runs away and tries to enter the talent show, but without a guitar, he is he's screwed. He asks his grandfather's statue for advice, and the plaque underneath reads, "Seize your moment," which he takes to mean, "Rob my grave." So Miguel heads over to Ernesto's burial vault and grabs his guitar off the wall. He asks permission to play in the plaza, just like Ernesto did when he strikes the guitar he strikes the guitar and leaves Kick Up behind him, and people immediately notice the guitar is gone, causing Miguel, because Miguel is dead. He has been dead the whole time.
What a moment. God damn.
Sense moment. Yeah. He runs out, of course, and he's trying to get everyone's attention, but he starts running right through them when he realizes
he's not dead, though, just to be clear. Like, he had just been turned into a ghost because he stole from the dead on the Day of the Dead.
Correct.
Big crime.
A transitive property, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Vis-a-vis.
That's not how the transitive property.
Vita means life.
Sure.
Exactly.
Thank you, too.
His parents search for him, but he falls into a grave. And when a woman comes to help him out, she pulls him up and he notices she's practically skin and bones, this poor woman. Oh, wait, no, she's dead. She is a skeleton. He has entered the world of the dead. And Dante is there, too, because dogs are so pure. They transcend the mortal realm, unlike cats who are the spawn of the devil. Miguel's Tia Rosita, Papa Julio, Tia Victoria, and Tia Oscar and Felipe come to his aid. They want to take him to Mama Imelda for help, but she's stuck. She couldn't cross over. She got stuck at customs, so they got to take her to him. So they take him over the spirit bridge, and he notices there's a bunch of other spirit bridge, and they're all made of these amazing flower petals, just like the ones for the flowers on the offering.
So pretty. It's gorgeous. So pretty. It glows. Like, the only other thing that I've ever kind of seen like that is like in the Cinderella reboot, when they like whatever they do to her dress, it like glows this pretty blue. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what they did to these flowers. And
yeah,
love it.
The whole scenery here is just stunning. And you got to imagine that when these 3D artists see what the concept artists had drawn, they're like, fuck yeah, we're going to make this shit out of
this. It's cool. It's one of those things, like, this is a totally nerdy joke, but like when you're in After Effects and you put the glow effect on something, and then you're like, what if I just doubled the glow effect? And then that's when Tim goes, yeah, that looks
yeah.
good.
I also just love the structure of them being bridges and having sort of those architectural, what do they call, Kevin? You know, those little arches? Like, arches. I guess just arches. Sure.
Yeah. Arches, like support arches, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say scaffolding, but that's not it, Kevin.
No, that's definitely not it.
Things and
breaking or we get back to the plot, though. Let me tell you about our sponsors.
This podcast is brought to you by Canva. Guess what? You see all the cool stuff happening and Kind of Funny all the time, the new motion graphics from Tim or from Roger or from Nick or whatever. I guess where they learned to do a lot of that stuff, the new stuff, because they had basic skills before, but not expert skills. They've been learning it from Canva. Canva Pro is the easy-to-use design platform that has everything you need to design like a pro. No matter what you're creating and sharing, Canva Pro has everything you need in one place, including a collection of over 75 million premium photos, videos, audio, and graphics. Plus, Canva Pro comes with time-saving tools that simplify and speed up the creative process. Just go to canva.me/kindoffunny to get your free 45-day extended trial. That's canva.me/kindoffunny. canva.me/kindoffunny. Our next sponsor is Stamps.com. If you know anything about Kind of Funny, you know we've been using Stamps.com for a long time. When Joey was sending out a whole bunch of Patreon stuff way back in the day at the office, she had to start using Stamps.com because we were using so many stamps and it's easier to use Stamps with Stamps.com. You can mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer, send letters, ship packages, and pay less, a lot less, with discounted rates from USPS and UPS. Stamps.com saves businesses thousands of hours and tons of money every year. Stamps.com is a no-brainer, saving nearly 1 million small business owners like you time and money. And with their switch and save feature, you can quickly compare carriers to find the best rates every time. Stop wasting time going to the post office and go to Stamps.com instead. There's no risk, and with our promo code KINDOFFUNNY, all one word, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments and no contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type KINDOFFUNNY, all one word. That's Stamps.com, promo code KINDOFFUNNY. Stamps.com, never go to the post office again.
Are you talking about a flying buttress? That's the only thing that's I remember from history. One of them, Joe. Architecture.
That's kind of like one of them.
I don't think that's
keystone somewhere in here. Anyway, Dante follows and Miguel loses sight of where he's going. When he finally looks up, he sees the land of the dead, and it is stunning, as we've all talked about. He says, "This isn't a dream. You're all really out there. I thought it was one of those made up things, like vitamins." And his aunt goes, Miguel, vitamins are real. He goes, yeah, I'm starting to think so.
Great performance. Great read of that line.
Oh, great little bit. He's got a couple of those here that I think I marked a few of them, but he's got great little moments like that too, where it's like very contemporary humor, which I think fits very nicely into this. Of course, he sees the Alebrijes, spirit creatures who guide souls on their journey and make caquitas everywhere. And Kevin, just in case you're wondering, caquitas are mini poops, I think.
I'm not wondering.
They're mini poops, I think.
We both know that you know what they are, and then I know what they are.
Caquitas. That's a fun word to say, Tim.
Little cacapupu.
Everyone passes through the realm, has to check into the customs, which cross-references their photos with the ones their families have put on ofrendas. I love this. I think it's super... such an interesting use of, I think it's cool.
I agree. It's just like the systems of like, how would they figure out who could go across and who wouldn't? They're like, let's make it into fun. The TSA.
And all of this sounds totally fine until you get the overall theme of that if you are not remembered, you go away forever. And that is just the most haunting thing.
It's terrifying.
It happens to everyone eventually, Andy.
Oh, for sure, Kevin. Yeah. I mean, there's always that, you know, that one shower thought.
Of course, we get introduced to Hector here, who was trying to think through.
The shower thought that sort of freaks you out, where it's like, you know, there's one day there will be one person who doesn't remember will be the only person who remembers who you are, and then they'll die, and then that's it. That's it for your legacy and your existence.
No, we're all on YouTube now, which means that 30 years from now, someone's like, I really like these guys. I hope they make more content.
That's true.
They're not going to realize we have been dead for fucking 30
years. Yeah, all snake bites.
In this scene where they introduce the TSA idea, is this where we get a couple people that we see go by, like the quick jokes with the dude with the grill? Or is this later?
Well, this is Hector. We're getting introduced to him where he's trying to sneak in as Frida. Yeah.
When we see that joke, I'm like, oh, that's an interesting thing to throw out there. I'm sure they're not going to commit to this over and over again.
They totally do.
It's Ratzenberger, the guy with the grill. At whatever point in the movie that happens.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, that's great.
It was during this part, too, when they start talking about the forgetting thing that I felt like extreme guilt of like, should I? How come we don't do this in my how come my mom and my grandma never did these? Like, am I fucking up? Now I have no ancestors. They're all gone forever.
Yeah, I don't think about it, Joey.
Existential crisis.
It's going to get dark.
See, that's the opposite of Catholicism. In Catholicism, they're always up there watching. Always.
What does it mean if they're Mexican Catholic?
Oh, they're watching, Joe, and they're judging. And they're pissed. Right now.
All of the ones that are still around are still judging, too, so it's fine.
Yeah.
So not much has changed. Mm-hmm.
Solid point. Easy come, easy go, as they say. Let's see. Hector tries to game the system. Once it doesn't work, he bolts for it, but he sinks into the flower bridge. He can't make it across without the official sign-off from the customs agent. They declare Miguel, which makes the customs agents literally drop. He's like, anything to declare? And like, yeah, this kid's alive. And he's like, what? How did this happen? Did you steal from the dead or something? Then they take Miguel to the office of family reunions, where we meet Mama Imelda. She's there just giving the customs agent just hell, because she's like, I should be able to go there. But it turns out, of course, she can't make it over the bridge because her picture's not on the ofrenda, because that is the picture that Miguel currently has with him that he has taken off from that. So that's why she couldn't make it over there. He stole from the dead, which is why he's there. He's cursed, which is the opposite of what you're supposed to do on Dia de los Muertos. Also, they call Dante a funny-looking Elebrijes, which they were like, maybe he's just, and then they're like, I don't know if it's here or not. I think maybe it might be the next scene, but they're like, she's like, oh, that's the spirit animals coming, spirit creatures come in all different sizes, and they don't always have to look the same. They look over and he's chewing his foot, and she's like, yeah, he's just a dumb dog. Maybe I'm wrong on this one. Great, great way to animate that thing. Miguel comes clean. He accidentally took the photo off. We talked about that. Thankfully, Miguel's family's here. All he needs is for one of them to give him their blessing so he can pass over. And of course, Mama Melda says she'll do that. But in order to give her a blessing, he has to promise to never play music again, which he reluctantly agrees to. And then he's instantly transported back to the mortal realm and immediately picks up that guitar, which breaks his promise. So he's immediately transported back. And none of his other then he tries to get all the other family members to do it for him, but then, of course, they don't want to defy Mama Imelda because she is the matriarch. And so he's like, I gotta find the only other living relative that I know of who's in the land of the dead, Ernesto de la Cruz. He will give me his blessing so I can go play music and get everything I want, have my cake and eat it too.
Nick, what's the thing that would have stopped you? That if they're like, you know, I give you my blessing to go back to the land of the living, but no more Reese's cups.
No. It would have been no more. There would have been like no more Diet Coke. And I'd be like, I can't promise that. And then it'd be like this.
What about Cherry Coke Zero?
The Diet Cokes would have killed you. The Coke Zeros would have killed you. And I'm like, I need more. Like you got a rock of aspartame in your stomach the size of a small football. You can't
looking for a second opinion on that one.
I heard it both ways. I'll get that thing broken up. I get that thing. Kevin will come over with a little tack hammer, break that fucking thing up really easy. I'll just pass it in the night.
God.
Yeah.
That's no, what holy for pass it in the night.
Get up in the middle of the night, be like, here we go. Put your mouth guard in.
Well, at least you're getting up, because in my mind, you didn't need to get up. You just let it happen.
No. You got to have something to bite down on.
Yeah, you gotta get up. A kidney stone before,
it is not fun.
I have not. It doesn't sound fun.
Yeah.
Shoot ultrasounds at it, Nick. I'll just go in there and boom.
I don't have the kind of money for ultrasounds, Kevin. I need you to just give me some raspberries on my stomach. You know
what
I mean? Just
what is Kevin doing?
Kevin's making a
ocean doing ultrasounds
sound.
On Nick's stomach. Joey, use your imagination.
Okay.
Joey, close your eyes.
Okay.
Kevin, make the sound again.
Audio listeners, by the way, you're missing out a lot of good content right now. All right. There we go.
So that's either Kevin. All right. It's either Kevin making an ultrasound on my stomach or Star Trek lasers. I'm not quite sure which.
Either one.
Hector and Miguel, he overhears Hector, of course, saying that he knows the rest of the crews, so they strike a deal. Hector will get him back to the living world if Miguel agrees to put his picture on an ofrenda so he can pass back and forth, because he desperately wants to get back there for some reason. Meanwhile, Mama Melda calls in some help in the form of her spirit creature, Pepita, who is freaking an enormous cat-like creature, which is awesome. Hector gives Miguel his picture. Of when he was a mariachi. They head over to Cici's, I think is how you say, or Chechi's studio, and Dante gets into a scuffle with Frida Kahlo, and you're like, oh wow, they're doubling down on Frida Kahlo. That's hilarious. Yep, At first I was like, this is genius, because you just have a little cameo where he's dressed as her, and then they actually have her, and you're like, that's hilarious. And then she plays a pivotal role in the third act. You're like, that's pretty awesome. Let's see. Frida shows Miguel her new studio her new show that's going to open the gala event for Ernesto de la Cruz, and it is insane. Miguel tells her she should get a little bit of music and gives her a couple cues that she could do, which she very much appreciates. As Ernesto rises from the ground, Miguel is disappointed. Ernesto doesn't do his rehearsals. That's the whole point of why they went there. Ernesto apparently is halfway across town at his pre-party. And he's like, damn it, that does sound cool. Then
this whole scene spoke to me. I don't even need to go too deep into it. Obviously, love production, love this type of dumb epic for the sake of epic bullshit. And their whole introduction to this ending with him popping up and it not being him, and like her eventually just being like, I want it on fire. And like all the improv and art stuff. I was like, this is just so fucking good job, Coco.
Then a bunch of the people there, a bunch of the musicians, call Hector Chorizo, and he's like, why do they keep calling you that? And apparently he died because of some bad chorizo, and everyone laughs, which is totally the kind of thing people would do. The only way Miguel is getting closer to Ernesto tonight is if he wins a big music competition in the square, but first he'll need a guitar. Hector asks why Miguel would ever want to be a musician and spend his life performing like a monkey for a complete strangers, but Miguel dismisses him. He says, what do you know? You are no musician. Hector's like, well, I am actually. Hector takes Miguel to the place where everyone's being forgotten and asks for Chicharron. Chichi, as they calls him, is not happy to see Hector.
So sad.
But he's fading. And this is where we get introduced to the idea that if no one remembers you in the mortal world, if you're not put on an ofrenda, that you die forever. We call it the final death. And so he asks Hector to play him one more song as he fades out and goes on.
What the fuck, Pixar? Mm-hmm. Again, there's some rules to this shit. You either break our hearts in the fucking beginning of the movie and let us get over it, the end of the movie so we can think about it later. You don't just get to randomly one third in just be like, boom, here's a fucking moment that you don't see coming, that takes the concept they've built so far and just immediately is like, no, we're going to take it even further. It's going to fuck you up. Good for them, man.
And it makes you feel all the feelings about a character you've known for 0.5 seconds.
Exactly.
But I do love Chicharron, so... there is something about that. I thought about getting something.
I mean, it's better to have loved than lost than to have never loved at all.
Yes.
And oftentimes when I eat too many chicharrones, I lose them very, very quickly. I pass them in the night.
God damn it.
Something else being passed in the night.
Let's see. Miguel says he can remember He's like, I can remember it's teach your own. I want to get back to the world I remember. He goes, it doesn't work that way. You have to be remembered, passed down from person to person in the real world. It's not going to work. He's gone forever. So that's the stakes where we're at right now. On the way to the Battle of the Bands, Hector tells Miguel that he used to play with Ernesto de la Cruz, which it turns out Hector doesn't hold in very high regard, and we'll figure that out later. The competition begins. Winner gets to play for Ernesto at his party. Miguel wants to play Remember Me, but guess what? That's basically just like the most popular song he's ever had, super played out, and they go around, and I love this part where everyone's doing their own little twist on Remember Me and they're all terrible, and he's like why don't I play Poco Loco instead.
That's the mainstream right song. It's so lame.
We
gotta go something different.
Real fans know Poco Loco.
And Poco Loco, it turns out, is a fucking slap and a half, but we'll get to that in a sec. Miguel, let's see, Hector freaks when Miguel tells him he's never performed before, and he goes, if I can't go out there and play one song, how can I ever be a musician? I don't just want to get Ernesto's blessing. I want to prove that I'm worthy of it. And Hector decides to show him the ropes. He says, shake it out and then give me your best Greedo. And then grab their attention and don't let it go. And then Miguel tries to give a Greedo. It doesn't really work that well. Miguel takes the stage and freezes. He spots Hector, who motions for him to Greedo. And then after a couple seconds, he gets after it. And Miguel takes a breath and he lets out a Greedo. It's a serviceable Greedo, I would say. And then that gives him what he needs to start getting after it. And man, Poco Loco, if we could just have Andy play that entire song right now, I'd be very, very happy about this, because it's a great part in this. Of course, Dante steps up and drags Hector on stage so that they can duet and harmonize better than Don Henley and Glenn Frey, or I guess some would say contemporarily Nick Scarpino and Andy Cortez.
Yeah,
of course, of course.
The crowd goes nuts and Miguel is elated until he spots his family skulking around the audience looking for him. The MC makes an announcement that his family is looking for him, and Hector realizes he's like, wait a minute, you're the kid. He's like, your family's here. You could have been sent back the entire time. Why are we wasting time with Ernesto? We're trying to find Ernesto de la Cruz. You're screwing me here, kid. But when he threatens to take it back, he's like, Miguel ends up throwing his picture away and then splits. Dante tries to drag him back, and Miguel calls him a dumb dog, which makes him sad. And then Mama Imelda lands atop Pepita and chases him up a staircase. She says, I'm just trying to save your life. And he says, music is the only thing that makes me happy, and you're trying to take it away. You'll never understand. And she's like, buddy,
you don't know shit about what I know, dude. Are you kidding me? I'm like 19 generations away from you.
Yeah, dude, I've been through it all.
I gotta say, like, this movie has kind of Nolan-esque writing when it comes to making sure the plot is only sticking to, like, and characters are only
what you need to know.
So what you need to know and what the characters should know without ruining the twists and stuff for each other in a way that just works. Like, they must have had some type of whiteboard where they're like keeping notes of like chart, making sure that they're getting things right, because like they do a great job of like keeping it consistent so that when moments happen, you're not like, well, that doesn't make sense, why didn't blah blah blah. It's like, well, shit, they thought about that and answered it.
Miguel has it all wrong. She loves music, but when they had Coco, there was something in her life that mattered more than, but her husband still wanted to play for the world. We each made a choice. Now Miguel must do the same, but he doesn't want to have to pick sides, he says. He just wants his family to support him like they're supposed to do. And he heads back up. He heads to the party and tries to get in through the door by saying he's related to Ernesto. And the guy's like, dude, everyone says that. They all try to get a rookie mistake. He gets bounced. So, of course, he spots the other band.
Ask for Mike.
I was going to say the Wayne's World line. That was better than Joe. And Wayne's World Nick, when he's like, everybody's girlfriend's in
he's
there.
He's like,
man,
my girlfriend's in there. let's see. Rookie mistake. Of course, he spots the other band, the one that actually won the competition, from the square, and asks for a favor. And they sneak him in a tuba. Miguel spots Ernesto and heads into the party, which is more impressive than he has imagined, but unfortunately loses Ernesto in all of the epicness. Love that there is a pool shaped like the guitar, which is super, super cool and super chic. So he heads up to the balcony to get everyone's attention, just like he learned in the prior scene, and starts playing. And then he gets Ernesto's attention. Before he can make it over to his great, great grandfather, he falls in the pool. Ernesto, being a good stand-up guy, jumps in after him and pulls him out. But when he does, all the paint that Hector had put on him to disguise him as one of the dead wears off, and he realizes it's the boy from that everyone's been looking for. But
being the big-ass celebrity he is, he's like, don't worry. Like, it's all good. You're my grandson? Yeah. Whoa! Everybody, like, what a cool... That must feel awesome in that moment.
Super cool, right? And it's like, wow. It's like Elvis Presley just said, Nick, yeah, you're my grandson. Super cool, man. I'd be like, cool. Can I have some money? Give me some money.
Elvis Presley died with like 50 pounds of shit in his body, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, that's why you got to practice.
I think he had a heart attack.
Passing things in the night.
He was.
No.
That's not how he died.
No, I'm not saying how he died, but he died with like a big load of shit in his body. Like,
I mean, he was taking a shit, right?
We all have shit in the bathroom in our body for sure. Right now. Yeah, they found him on the pot eating some fool's gold, I think. Which is like a peanut butter sandwich. Fool's gold is like a, it's a sandwich. It's like it's a like, bread with like butter and peanut butters and stuff
like
that.
Like deep fried like peanut butter jelly sandwich, right?
Yeah, basically, right?
While and on the toilet, like, it's replacing him.
Yeah, here's the problem, right? He was like, my stomach hurts. I think I got a big old ball of stuff in there that I need Kevin to come over and break up. And Kevin's like, I'm sorry. I'm too busy on the West Coast.
I'm breaking up Nick's. I'm breaking up Nick's belly of aspartame.
Aspartame. It's like, I'm Elvis Presley. I'm more important than Nick will ever be. And we all have to agree on that one. Let's see.
This sandwich is nuts, by the way. I just looked up this fool's gold sandwich.
Yeah,
take a loaf of Italian bread, you coat it in butter, and you bake it. Then you hollow it out and coat it with an entire jar of peanut butter, an entire jar of jam, and you stuff it with bacon.
Yeah, that was his like favorite snack, apparently, fool's gold.
That is a crazy sandwich.
I think he had a heart attack. I think he had a heart attack on the pot. He was trying to get it all out, and it just wouldn't move. Anyway, now that we've grossed out the audio listeners, Hector once again dresses like Frida Kahlo to sneak into the party while Ernesto shows all of his friends his great grandson.
So gross.
Miguel asks Ernesto if he ever regretted choosing music over everyone else. He says, "One cannot deny who one is meant to be, and you, my great grandson, are meant to be a musician. We cannot belong to one family. The world is our family." He invites Miguel to the Sunrise Spectacular show, but the boy has to get home before he turns to a skeleton forever. Cool little scene where he pulls up, to show him, and like his skin's translucent.
I love that effect.
That's super cool.
You know what it kind of reminds me of?
Back to the Future.
No, I guess that too. I was gonna say Sacha Baron Cohen's character in Luca.
Oh my god!
that underwater creature from the deep that has this that translucent body. You could see his heart beating. That's what it reminded me of so much.
Let's see. So Ernesto grabs a flower and gives his blessing to Miguel, but the scene is interrupted by Hector. Ernesto is taken back by the appearance of his old friend, but it turns out that Hector wrote all. He's like, "Listen, man, this guy's a bad guy. I wrote all of his great songs, and when he died, he took credit for it." And then Miguel puts two and two together, because he says, "I would have moved heaven and earth for you, my old friend." And Miguel's like, "Wait a minute, there was this show there was a part in a movie where a character said that right before poisoning the other character." And then Hector thought about it and he's like, "Holy shit, that's exactly what happened to me. And I thought it was bad chorizo this whole time. No one's eaten chorizo in all of Mexico because of this story." Mm-hmm. And now we can enjoy it once again. Hector attacks Ernesto and security is called to be taken away. And then he tries to gauge whether or not Miguel's going to be cool about this. And Miguel's like, "I am not going to be cool about this." So Miguel calls in his security as well and throws him into a watery pit alongside Hector. Of course, Hector is breaking down now. He's starting to fade because no one remembers him and he should have listened. And Miguel's like, "It's all my fault. I should listen to my family." And then Hector flashes gold and collapses to the ground. He tells Miguel all he wanted was to tell his daughter her papa was trying to come home. He just wanted to see his daughter one more time. Of course, his daughter is Coco.
And what a moment.
Oh, I am so stupid. He says, "Even if I never get to see Coco in the living world, I thought at least one day I could see her here and give her a hug. But she's the last person alive to remember me." That moment she's gone from the living world, Hector, of course, will disappear forever. He's like, "I even wrote her a song once. They used to sing it every night at the same time," which I think is just the most adorable and amazing thing ever. And he says, "I want to sing it to her one last time." And that song, of course, was Remember Me.
A weird song to sing to your kid as he's falling asleep or she's falling asleep, right?
No. Because you sing it to her and then she sings it. I thought it was endearing because like wherever he's out in the world at 10 o'clock, they both sing that song, knowing that they're both singing the song to remember each other.
Oh, all right. That was the whole point of it.
Sorry, Scott, about making shoes, Kevin.
I mean, Coco, we all know that Coco made a lot of shoes. So like, it's fine.
Poco Loco is going to be called Loco Patito, Kevin. Zapato.
Zapatito. Let's see. Remember, yeah, we get a really cute scene where Hector sings to young Coco, and it's very, very sweet, of course. A little flashback scene. He says, "He stole your guitar, he stole your songs. You should be the one the world remembers, not De La Cruz." And then, of course, Hector's like, "Look, you're not getting this. I didn't write Remember for the whole world. I wrote it for Coco. I'm a pretty sore excuse for a great grandpa." And then Miguel's like, another one of those fun lines. He's like, "Are you kidding me? A minute ago, I thought I was related to a murderer. You're a total upgrade." He's like, then he says, "My whole life, there's been something that made me different, and I never knew where it came from, but now I know it came from you. I'm proud to be your family." And then he goes, "You know what? I'm proud to be your family too." And then they just Greedo the fuck out.
Fuck,
and
yeah. It's
awesome. Then Dante finds them and leads Mama Imelda and Pepita to them, and they're saved. Dante turns into a legit spirit guide, and it's amazing, even though it looks exactly the same, but he's like hypocolor now, and he's got these little tiny wings that are hilarious.
I think he freaks out when it's happening, you know?
Yeah, he's like, I don't know.
Very self-aware of it. Yeah, it's freaky. Yeah.
So I got
it's painful.
This was something that was a little unclear to me both times I watched it. Did he die here? And that turned him into it? Like, did he choke on his tongue? Because the whole movie kind of keeps hinting that, like, he's almost going to die a couple times. Like, there's the first time he's biting on his leg and he, like, chokes. Then when he's, like, when they're under the tunnel, he, like, almost dies again. And it cuts away. And it almost, like, the Hector's given a speech that really makes it seem like they're going to cut back to him and he's dead. But then this time he, like, chokes on his tongue and then he turns into colors.
No, he was just like he gained his wings, you know.
Yeah, I thought he like just gained his wings basically from he
because all
been
pets are ready to be angels.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I think at that point Dante had just been this ugly, gross mutt, and then at this point was like, right, I'm serving my purpose. Look, now, Andy, I'm gonna pop the fuck off, dude.
Just because something lost all of its hair doesn't mean it doesn't have a purpose anymore. Okay, it doesn't mean it has to be ugly. Let's just remember that.
Now what? Now, okay, but what height are we talking?
We're talking this. The dog stands at least 5'7", 5'8".
An average human height of like 5'7". Yeah,
some would say like right. A perfect height. Perfect height.
Yeah, average. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Imelda gets mad at Hector, of course, because she remembers him because they used to be married and he was the one that left her. But Miguel steps in and tells her that all of this was his fault. Hector was right. Nothing is more important than family, and he needs to get Hector Hector's picture to the family ofrenda. He says, "I'm even willing to accept your blessing with all the conditions if you'll just help." And he tells his great-great-grandma that Ernesto is to blame. She's like, I love this moment too. She's like, it's not Hector's fault. Ernesto killed him. She murdered him. And Mama Imelda's like, that's no excuse for not coming home.
I'm still pissed.
Being murdered is not an excuse for not coming home. I'm still mad at you. And it's a great little endearing moment. But of course, Hector steps up and apologizes to his wife. And Imelda realizes that getting Hector's picture back is the right thing to do with the family reunited. They head over to the Sunrise concert to confront Ernesto. Frida's show opener is bonkers and the crowd is bewildered. Miguel and the family sneak in and with I guess disguised as their backup dancers and run into Ernesto, who Imelda knocks silly for killing the love of her life, and he's like, I'm the love of your life, Hector. She's like, I'm still mad at you, shut up. But then of course Ernesto uses that opportunity to
very cute.
This is my favorite quote from the whole thing. It's just like so perfectly encapsulate my family of like, yeah, I'm still really mad at you. We're gonna talk about that later, but like, you're still family, so
yeah, I still love you.
You know, gotta have your back.
And then, of course, security get involved and a tussle ensues. Imelda grabs the picture from Ernesto, but she's actually taken onto the stage with the whole world watching. Miguel motions for her to sing, and sing she does. Miguel slams a guitar in Hector's chest to back her up, and she makes her way down the grand staircase set piece as security chases after her. This is a great scene, of course, interrupted by Ernesto, who catches her arm, and then they start duet, sort of sing, fight, kind of do a thing here. Imelda runs back to Hector with a photo and pulls out a flower, and you think it's going to be a nice moment, but you're like, he's got to be right behind you, right? She goes, Miguel, I gave you my blessing to go home to put our photos up and to never, and he goes, never play music again. She goes, no, never forget how much your family loves you. It's good. But it's interrupted, of course, when Ernesto grabs Miguel and drags him over to the edge of a balcony, a very, very tall balcony, is about to throw him off. And then the ants think fast. They're like, you know what? We can't be of much service here, but we do know how to run a camera and a switcher board. So let's turn that bad boy on him and hope to God he doesn't kill our grandson. It looks like Mama has got that.
The main switcher not have someone live directing, you know, or switching. Where's the TD?
I don't know, man, but
he's probably just like, yo, they went off book. We don't need shit. Who the hell knows what's happening right now? There's random people coming on. They're not doing the songs we practice. Who cares?
Yeah, and the camera guy was the same one that was with us when we were with Shaq and interviewed him. Yeah. Just peaced out.
Yeah, went to lunch. I saw Shaq in a Papa John's commercial the other day. I was like,
Shaq was like an hour late. That was Shaq's fault.
Yeah, you're right.
Shaq doesn't care about your time frame.
And also, we handled it. I handled the camera. We got it. We got there.
Of course, he's like, hey, man, I'll do whatever it takes to like, you know, you got to do whatever it takes to fucking achieve your dream and protect it at all costs. So he just tosses Miguel off of the side of the building. And of course, Dante rushes to help, but his little wings can't get it done. So Pepita has to step in and save the day, swooping in to save Miguel a split second before he smashes on the pavement below. But unfortunately, Hector's photo falls out of his pocket. When Ernesto returns,
do you think that would have killed him?
Probably. I always think that, right? You see this in movies where the impact is like you're going then this way and then someone takes you this way, but it would still jolt your spine.
But I mean, like,
oh yeah,
he's like, that's, is he like, his physical body is there and like it would have had impact
from the floor? Fall?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Cause it's like,
can he just not die there?
I think he just needed to get like, it was just going to be hard for them to get down to him. So he was going to die because the sun was coming up. I don't know. It was dramatic. Don't ask questions.
Mm-hmm. It was dramatic. It certainly had me on my toes.
Yes. When Ernesto recruits to the stage, the crowd boos him and Pepita punts him into the bell, which once again crushes down on top of him like it did in real life. Hector falls to the ground.
Hold on. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Kevin. It had you on your toes.
And then I said, tippy toes.
Yeah.
The old phrase, had me on my toes.
Had me on my toes. Yeah.
Tim, I'm reading a little Pixar theory here that says that you were mentioning Dante's tongue, and apparently there's a part in the movie where he licks paint, and they're saying that that's what kills him and makes him a spirit guide.
See, that's what I'm saying. There's like five moments throughout the movie where it's like it teases his death, and then it seems like that time he literally dies by choking on his own tongue, which is like the lamest way.
I think you can eat a lot of paint and like still be okay.
Let's do it right now.
Kids in the 60s ate a bunch of lead paint.
You'll pass it in the night. Don't worry.
You know? It's not good for you. The lead chip thing is bad.
No, it's bad for you.
There will be long lasting effects.
But like also like a dumb dog's not gonna like, you know.
But also like he was guiding. He's been guiding.
Yeah, he earned his wings, Tim. Like, we don't make this about things dying.
Yeah,
that goes back to my question of, can you die if you're in the spirit realm if you're not actually dead? Because at the end, he's back in like the normal world, but
the only reason he was in the spirit world, right, is because he was cursed. But like dogs can go in there freely, right?
Oh, that's right.
Right. Or he was already destined to be the guide of this kid.
Mm-hmm. You're he's already destined to be dead. It's like, damn, Kevin.
Dead all along. Back to the plot. Hector falls to the ground. The sun is coming up, and both he and Miguel are out of time. With no time left, of course, they give their blessing to Miguel, and the boy awakens in Ernesto's vault. He grabs De La Cruz's guitar and rushes to Mama Coco's side to tell her about her father, but the words won't do the trick. Of course, the rest of the family interrupts, and they rush in to stop Miguel from causing Mama Coco more stress and more pain, but the boy knows what needs to be done. He picks up Ernesto's guitar and delivers his great-great-grandfather's message in the form of a song, Remember Me. Of course, Mama Coco, after a couple seconds, does in fact remember him. She remembers the words like they were yesterday. She tells Miguel that her father used to sing that song to her, and Miguel tells her that her papa loved her very, very much. And then, of course, Coco reaches into her bedside drawer and takes out a small diary full of poems and letters her father had sent her over the years. More so, she pulls out the torn part of the photo that Miguel has been carrying with him, which shows her father's face.
I didn't see that part. Because I was fucking crying my eyes out and everything was just blurry.
It's a great song. It's a great moment.
Yeah. I am midway through a flight from Houston to San Francisco, just straight up like, like just ugly crying, open mouth, but you can't see it because I'm masked up. And it's just, tears are rolling down my face. And I just hope that the guy next to me isn't like really worried about me. But then I assume he looked and saw Coco and was like, I get it.
Got you, bro.
I get it.
I understand it. Let's see. 1 year later, the town honors Hector for all the songs he had written, which he wrote in poems and letters to his daughter, presumably before they came out. This is a little part we gloss over here, but the whole town's like, we honor you, we believe you. And Miguel tells his little sister about the importance of the ofrenda, just like he was told at the beginning of the movie. These aren't just pictures. They're our family, and they're counting on us to remember them. Abuelita comes in and puts a picture of Coco next to that of her
father. Oh, another moment. Coco
has passed on. And then
we knew she was really close, right?
No, yeah, but like it's just like just
the final moment, you know?
Just having that happen. Like it's not like we even saw her a whole lot in the movie. It just hit me again. I'm just like, got another wave. Let me get my fourth mask and put this shit on.
But see, I love how they so quickly celebrate it though and turn the sadness into a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, over in Land of the Dead, we do get that resolution. Hector finally gets to cross over and visit his relatives, and he is joined by his wife, Imelda, and their daughter, Coco. And they hold hands. He gives her a hug, finally, and they hold hands together as they cross over the Flower Bridge. And
why is Coco super old?
Yeah, Kevin, it's like the Anakin Skywalker thing. Right? What version of Anakin are we putting in as a Force ghost?
You think it's dealer's choice, because grandma is like... young or great-great-grandma.
Yeah, but then it would be weird when Miguel dies and he's old and then his great-great-grandmother is a child. It's like, this is super confusing to everyone. You just the age you are and when you die. That's
what isn't that what it is, though? Is
I
there
think
anyone?
That's what it is.
Yeah, because no, everyone we know the source of death, it is how they looked then.
Yeah, but no, Kevin's saying, why wouldn't she be young? Why couldn't she be younger if she wanted to?
Well, I was saying Grandma Imelda, right? Mm-hmm. That's her name? Mm-hmm. She like seemed like she was maybe in her mid-40s.
Everybody died at the age of 40 back then.
She definitely died. Like,
it was 1942, man. People died when they were 20.
Yeah.
Yo, there was bells dropping left and right, man. We don't know.
Yeah. If you lived to the age of 60, you were lucky. Nick, we also saw that whole wall full of, like, Hector's like accomplishments, right? And kind of and then we also see that part of the diary where it's like, hey, chorizo isn't actually dangerous, you can eat it now in Mexico, and everybody celebrates. Like, they're like, oh, that's why gosh, the day of the day, I knew it was chorizo. Bullshit,
this guy did it. Over in the land over in the land of living, Dante and Pepita cross over too, and they're back in their dog and cat form. Cool part where Pepita has a big shadow. I talked about that at the beginning. I thought that was really nice. Mm-hmm. And then they walk around the whole family, and we see both the living and the dead as they're all intermingling and hanging out and celebrating as Miguel sings to all of them. The end.
God
Not
damn.
Not the end, because then we get the banger version of Remember Me by Miguel, and it's so good.
Yeah, that is a good point, Joey. You're right.
Recuerdame. Oh my god. Seven syllables in the middle. You need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
I'm so happy you're back, Andy. We have been butchering that recently. So this is good.
Tim made the rest of us sing. It was not good.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Zade Wilson did. For music, he strays. But for family, he must say, please, require de me.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That was tight. That was tight. This is not haiku. I don't think you understood the assignment, Stefan Stevens, but I'm going to read it. Un poco loco. Coco gets me every time. I cry and I cry. Please remember me every time I say goodbye till I final die. Miguel can now sing of his lovely family. Team, do the right thing. This is number one in our hearts and memories, like Mama Coco. Okay, so I guess that was like four haikus to make one bigger message to us.
Oh, about sounds haiku. Like he really got it then.
So there we go.
The Voltron of haikus.
Let's see. And then
haikus, that's right.
Good,
this is, guys, prepare for this one. Pizza Bagel writes in, this movie means the world to me as it came out almost a decade to the day that my father had passed away. My haiku is for my dad, Alfredo. With love from Gordo, let music carry you home. Remember Fredo. There we go. There we go.
I brought it to you.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Miscellaneous writes the plot in haiku, of course. Miguel loves to play, but hides passion every day. Family says nay. To the show he heeds, but where? No, heads. To the show he heads, but where does he go instead? The land of the dead. Looking to be blessed, but can't follow her request, sets off on his quest. He reaches his goal, but when secrets take their toll, finds truth in the hole. Ernesto, rotten. Family, Hector's gotten. Gone, not forgotten.
Not forgotten, dude.
There we go. Thank you
God
so much.
Damn,
for
dude.
Before we get to Ragu Bagu, let me update you guys with the Pixar theory from the nanobiologist. There's a recurring theory that every single Pixar movie is connected in some way. Here's the big deep dive, red string everywhere theory for where Coco fits into the big picture. Before we dive into anything, let's take another look at Inside Out. That movie covers two things. One, emotions drive our actions. And two, our memories and emotions are extremely interconnected. They're two sides of the same coin. We've had lots of movies so far cover just how powerful emotions are, but this one covers the power of memories. Similar to emotion in the universe, A113 creates life. Memory basically creates an afterlife. Emotions are who you are and what you become, while memories are what you were. Now that that's established, let's take a look at the afterlife, the realm of the dead. It looks very similar to another location we've seen before, like the Islands of Personality, but on a much larger interconnected scale. This feels like a collectivism approach to a culture's history, where the more deeply tied to the culture a person or an item is, the longer they live in the afterlife, but also the grander their quote-unquote domain is, like how the Islands of Personality shape the person. Basically, it's an alternate realization of mementos. Finally, let's go back to our friend who likes to play bing pong. Bing Bong. Just about everything we saw in Riley's head was tied to emotions, except for Bing Bong, who existed solely as a memory. He's not a part of the emotional psyche like the five emotions are, or the pieces who help run Dreamland or clean up old forgotten memory orbs. He's an actual thing running around as a conscious memory of what Riley remembered, very similar to all the dead people in the Land of the Dead, and his death is very similar to the final death that is featured in Coco. So overall, Coco's more of a vague piece in the puzzle that covers the other side of emotions established in Inside Out. It covers the power of culture and collective memory and emotions and just how powerful it is by being able to breathe its own life. And it's the second half of the backbone that makes the Pixar theory so much fun when trying to connect the pieces together. That's cool. I like that. I like that a lot. Now, Andy, hit me with the ragged bagger.
It's a little bit slower, Nick, so just try to, a little bit slower tempo, no, but you'll get it.
No problem. Ragu. Is it still going? Or? Okay. No, hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to Rag Guys Talk Bad Guys for Pixar in Review. Number one on the list is Lhasa. Number two, Prospect. Number three, Newswater and Randall. Number four, Hopper. Number five, Erke de Visconti. Number six, Syndrome. Number seven, Muns and the Dogs. Number eight, Ego and Skitter. Number nine, Darla and Barracuda. Number 10, Woody, Sid from Toy Story 1. Number 11, Gabby from Toy Story 4. Number 12, Heartscrabble and the Roars from MU. Number 13, Otto from Wall-E. Number 14, Mordu and the Witch. Number 15, The Muddy Water and the Pterofactyls from The Good Dinosaur. Number 16, Chuck and Hubris from Cars. 17, Jackson Storm and Sterling from Cars 3. 18, Axelrod and Lemons from Cars 2. 19 is Joy and San Francisco from Inside Out with an asterisk. Then again, number 20, The Fear of Getting Lost in a Department Store from Finding Dory, which also has an asterisk because those aren't real. Where do we want to put Ernesto de la Cruz?
Pretty up there for me.
I think definitely above the bad guy from Luca. What was that?
I have
seven?
It in between Hooper and Hercule on my personal list.
Perfect. Perfect. That's what I
like
thought.
That. What do we think? We
I'd
like
go
that?
Higher than that. I'd put it under Prospector in Toy Story 2.
Now, who thinks? Let's do a vote.
What number is that?
Now.
Sorry.
What number four?
So it would be
with
number three.
That would be number three. So who thinks Ernesto de la Cruz is a better antagonist than Ercole Visconti? I agree. What about Hopper from Ants? Keep the hands up. If it's Hopper from Ants, you think it's better?
I like Hopper better.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Well, there you go.
It's only me and Andy that thought that. So yeah, number
Ernesto
five.
De la Cruz.
Boom. 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 So before we bring up the rankings, Andy has not been here.
Right. I've missed out on a lot. Andy, what were the last two movies I didn't even watch him?
He's won his battle with the snakes. Three. There were casualties on both sides, but we're happy that Andy's here.
Finding Dory.
I want to give my thoughts on Finding Dory real quick, Tim. I wrote a little bit of a almost 30-second review type thing. Did you know that some sharks can fall asleep with their eyes open? Wish I could have done that while watching this movie. Finding Dory, more like I find it boring. Enough with the whale talking sound. It's not funny anymore. It stopped being funny in 2003. Speaking of 2003, that was the last time a good movie was made. It was called Return of the King. Marlin and Nemo are very relatable in this movie. They're clownfish, and I'm a fucking clown for watching this. I would have rather worked for Ellen DeGeneres. This goes really low on the list for me, underneath A Bug's Life.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Damn, you just roasted the fuck out of Finding Dory.
Don't adjust your glasses. Don't be proud of what you just did, you fuck. And then for Cars 3, do you have anything to say?
Pretty good movie.
Yeah, so okay. Cars 3, me and Andy both voted at number 11, but everybody else voted it lower, which means the number is lower. So the final new list so far is number 1, Up. Number 2, Monsters, Inc. Number 3, Finding Nemo. Number 4, The Incredibles. Number 5, Wall-E. Number 6, Toy Story 3. Number 7, Inside Out. Number 8, Toy Story 2. Number 9, Toy Story 4. Number 10, Toy Story. Number 11, Luca. Number 12, Ratatouille. Number 13, Finding Dory. Number 14, Monsters University. Number 15, Cars. Number 16, A Bug's Life. Number 17, Cars 3. Number 18, Good Dinosaur. Number 19, Brave. Number 20, Cars 2.
And by the way, I didn't think Finding Dory was that bad. I just wanted to really shit on it.
What? That was your
I just really not like this movie. I just really wanted to shit on it. But I do think it's wild that you all have Cars 3 this low. Like, this movie is definitely the most improved of any of these, and I think it should be way higher. Y'all are crazy. Crazy, I say.
Crazy like Fox.
Agree. I'm happy Good Dinosaur is a real low. A terrible movie that it was.
What accurate about, Raptors.
Yeah. What about Coco? I'm going to start off. This is my number one. I'm surprised wow. that anything was gonna beat Finding Nemo. Surprised anything was gonna beat Monsters, Inc. Surprised anything was gonna beat Up. But this, I really think that it does everything Pixar does at its absolute best. And you know, Joey mentioned it earlier, but this is the most beautiful one. And I think that the last couple we've talked a lot about the melding of reality, like the real looking animation, and like still having character, and how Cars 3 did like a much better job than some of the other ones. But with this, I think that it's unmatched in terms of style and substance.
Let's go next.
I like this movie a lot, but I think for me, I'd put it number 6, right under Wall-E, which is our rifle number 1. You know what I mean? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Andy? I put this at number 1. This is it's one of those weird ones where what's the rewatch factor? Monsters, Inc., I think, is a funnier movie that I'd rather just kind of watch to lift up my spirits or whatever. But sure. This movie is just so complete and has so much purpose. And they just did a banger of a job with the story and kind of making all those threads connect in a meaningful way that just didn't feel cheap or faked or whatever. So, yeah, this is an easy number 1 for me. And I'm so happy that I thought it was as great as it was the first time.
I think it's hard for me to put anything above Up because I love Up so much. But I think that this movie is way stronger in the villain department with Ernesto de la Cruz and how that all wraps into the story versus Muntz and the Dogs, I don't think is as compelling of a villain. And the fact that the music in this is such a banger, I think all of that being said does edge it above Up.
Nick Scarpino.
Tough. It's tough. It's real tough. Because I'm with Andy. Like, I think the rewatchability of like things like Monsters, Inc. and Incredible is just more fun, but I do think this is just a far and away better movies, it's more complete movie. So I would probably put it at I mean, I think it's better than Up, so I'd put it at number 1.
There we go. Number 1, Coco. You know the rest.
I'm not really lazy again. Bastard.
Same list with Coco on top. Like, come on. Anyways, we are going to return later this week with the beginning of Scream in Review, and then next week we're in our final stretch of Pixar in Review, where we're going to be doing Onward. And then the week after that, Soul to take us home. Until next time, I love you all. Goodbye.